Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to a brand new Arsblog Arscast right here on arsblog.com. How are you? Hope you're well. It's Friday morning. We played in the Europa League last night, so normally I try and get the podcast done on a Thursday so it's available first thing on a Friday morning, but considering the game didn't finish till 10 o'clock, there was all the stuff to do after the game, the post-match stuff and everything else. I've had to put off podcast production until this morning, so apologies if you were expecting something first thing in the morning, but this, ladies and gentlemen, is the absolute worst consequence of being in the Europa League. Forget the long distance travel, the flights, the rickety roads to get to stadiums. Forget the low-quality games against relatively low-quality opposition. It's the fact that the podcast is delayed and it interrupts my schedule. That is absolutely the worst bit about the Europa League, which is why, of course, I hope we get back into the top four next season. I know Stan Kroenke will say it's good for us because it raises our profile as a club and generates more revenue for me, Stan, KSE, to invest back into the club because of our self-sustaining model. And Unai Emery will say, yes, it's a good idea because we're playing football at the highest European level and that makes us a more attractive opposition. And Sven Mislintat and Raul Sanyehi will say, yeah, we can bring in better players because, A, we've got more money, because Stan will definitely let us have the money, and we've got Champions League football to offer these people, and you generally get to play good teams in slightly better locations than you do in the Europa League. I understand all that. The players themselves, of course, will be delighted to be back in the Champions League because they all want to be part of it. But me, the only reason I want us to get there is so my podcasting schedule remains uninterrupted and I don't have to do things on a Friday morning. However, needs must. So we're going to talk now in a couple of moments' time to our guest about the game last night. Very disappointing, not from the result point of view, 0-0, not great. You know, it wasn't the greatest game of all time, wasn't the greatest performance of all time. Unai Emery, I think, quite interestingly, showed us where his priorities really lie. I know he's used a pretty strong squad in some of the Europa League games, but when it came to the crunch, he rotated heavily, and he showed us that the Premier League is absolutely the first priority, which of course is obvious, but the team selection last night against Sporting really did speak to keeping important players in reserve. No Granit Xhaka, no Lucas Torreira, no Mesut Ozil, no Alexandre Lacazette, no Hector Bellerin. Maybe it was injury because Bellerin was a slight doubt going into the Liverpool game, but he wasn't taking any chances with anyone. No Bernd Leno in the squad yesterday. So it shows us how he's viewing the Europa League in the context of the Premier League when we do have difficult Premier League games to come, and we've got one on Sunday against Wolves at the Emirates before we go into an interlull. So, you know, the overall performance wasn't particularly good. It was, I think, fairly standard Europa League fare. Sporting were completely and utterly unambitious. They didn't really come out and attack, therefore we didn't get any space in behind. They were pretty organized, and we found it a bit difficult to create chances. We are qualified for the knockout stages of the Europa League, which, of course, is a positive. We haven't yet won the group and topped the group, but we'll discuss what he might do in the final two Europa League games with our guest, Tayo. We'll be along now in a moment. But obviously, the injury to Danny Welbeck was a real shame because he's a guy who's had such problems down the years. Since he joined us, I think he was fairly fit at Manchester United, but he had this injury with us, bone bruising, which they thought was going to go away after a while and eventually required surgery, and having come back from the surgery, I don't think it was too long afterwards, he did the meniscus in his knee, and that set him back another 6 months or whatever it was he was on the sideline. So he's had two really, really lengthy spells out of the game while at Arsenal, and it looks as if he's going to have another one after what appears to be a very serious ankle injury. If you looked at the picture, he's gone over on his ankle, his studs have got caught in the turf, whatever it is, the foot is not the right way. So Unai Emery said afterwards they think something is broken in there, and whether there's other damage to ligaments or tendons or anything like that, we don't know yet, and probably won't know for a little while. We certainly don't know first thing on Friday morning. And Danny Welbeck, whatever you think of him as a player, he's experienced, he's an international, he adds some depth to this squad. You know, we have Aubameyang, we have Lacazette, and Danny Welbeck is our third choice striker. And I think quite a lot of clubs would like someone like Danny Welbeck to be their third choice striker, particularly this season when he stayed fit and he's contributed and he's given the squad some depth. So really disappointing for him to pick up that injury. All you can do is wish him the absolute best and hope he recovers speedily and fully. His contractual situation is another side issue, but to discuss it a bit more, I think we should bring in our guest now. So, as always, a pleasure to welcome Tayo Papula to the show. How are you, man?
Hi, Andrew. I'm really good, thanks. How are you?
I'm good. I suppose when we think about last night, there's only one place to start. It's not the scintillating 0-0 draw. It's not the fact that we are now qualified for the knockout stages of the Europa League. It is the injury to Danny Welbeck. We don't have the full scope of what it is, but they fear a broken ankle. And I guess along with a broken ankle, there could be damage to ligaments and everything else. If you saw the picture of the way that his ankle twisted underneath him, it was not a healthy situation for Danny. And it's really difficult not to feel absolutely gutted for him, because he's had such a hard time with injuries, and he really does seem like one of the good guys, doesn't he?
Yeah, what you said, Andrew. It's just really unlucky for a player who seemed to be finding his place in the team, but more importantly, it's just someone who's been so desperately unlucky with injuries, has always given the best that he can for the side, and as you say, seems really popular there. He's got his start, and he scored the crucial goal for us over there. And it is important to say that he was finding his place in the squad behind the front two, of course, behind the first, you know, the first teamers. But he had a valuable role to play in the team this season, across that front three, if not in his favourite position. And then you bring into it the obvious thing that he's got his contract's up at the end of the season, and you just have to wonder whether you're going to see him in the shirt again. And an injury in a last, you know, an injury at this time, an injury at any time is terrible. Of course it is. An injury at this kind of critical part of his career. He's got a new manager to impress, which he was doing. He's not at the start of his career, let's face it. So this kind of injury is just so sad for such a lovely bloke. And you knew immediately as well. Yeah. You know, I mean, he did as well. He went up for, you didn't even have a chance to go, you know, hands on the head and miss chance kind of thing, because his hand went up immediately. And the reaction from the other players is always telling.
Yeah.
And then there was just that really awkward hush, which we've seen many times, you know, at the stadium over the years. As an Arsenal fan, just really, really sad for him. And it was, the game wasn't the best at the time, but it did kind of knock any extra wind out.
Yeah, I think it did. I mean, the thing about this particular injury coming to him at this particular time, as you mentioned, the contract situation, he doesn't have the security of knowing that he's going to be at Arsenal next year. So that adds an air of uncertainty to it. It's a situation I don't think we know exactly what's gone on with the Welbeck situation, whether he's even had a contract offer from Arsenal. I'm not sure that he has. You know, it's not a case that he's decided to turn it down, or he dallied over it or delayed over signing, as perhaps was the case with Aaron Ramsey. We just don't know that he's been given a new contract. And probably come the summer, for him to leave on a Bosman would maybe have suited Arsenal would maybe have suited Danny Welbeck. They could use him throughout this season, which I think was happening while Reece Nelson, for example, is away being blooded in Hoffenheim. He comes back and he can then more or less naturally fit into the Welbeck space in the squad, leaving aside, of course, the fact that we could have cashed in and maybe sold him for 15 or 20 million pounds in the summer. It would be a shame if it was a case that this injury ended his Arsenal career, if we didn't get a chance to see him in the shirt again. Unfortunately, that's happened a few times, you think most notably with Santi Cazorla as well.
Yeah, I mean, and this manager as well, Andrew, as well. You may argue that under the previous regime, then Danny Welbeck would have been handed a year extension. Who knows, he might still be. But, you know, there doesn't seem to be... What I'm saying is that there doesn't seem to be a great deal of sentiment with this manager, you know, and this regime, and perhaps it shouldn't be in terms of it being a business, yeah. You know, which of course it is. But, yeah, you do kind of... You wish that Welbeck could maybe catch a break. And I do think that... You know, the way that Santi Cazorla was allowed to move on, Aaron Ramsey, fully fit Aaron Ramsey, is being moved on fairly, you know, fairly unceremoniously. And there won't, sentiment won't play a part in the fact that we've probably seen the, you know, I say the last of Danny Welbeck in terms of playing in the team. I can't, you know, hopefully there'll be something for him at the end of the season. We don't know the extent of the injury at this point, I should say, but it just feels, it felt very depressing for him and, you know, well, for him, actually, for no one else. It felt very depressing for him and upsetting for us to watch.
Yeah, I mean, he has been used quite a lot by Unai Emery, you know, either as a guy who's come on in games. I think he likes his athleticism and his physicality and the work rate that he gives you, but also the fact that he stayed fit and scored 5 goals this season. It's not a huge return. Nevertheless, you know, for a guy who hasn't been starting that regularly, 5 goals is a reasonable return. As you said, he got the winner out in Lisbon in the previous game. He is experienced. He's an international player. And it does, if he is out, leave a bit of a gap in the squad. We had that unfortunate thing as well for Eddie Nketiah, who was ready to come on. And you really, you know, you can have sympathy in many ways for Danny Welbeck, but also have some sympathy for a young player who was about to make his first appearance of the season. You know, how gutting is that to be on the sideline, stripped, ready to come on, and then you see Lichtsteiner do his hamstring, it means a rethink and he can't come on, and we put on Ainsley Maitland-Niles instead, which I suppose we should say is a bit of a positive because he's back from an injury that he picked up at the start of the season, so having that little bit of depth there and having him back is good, but Eddie Nketiah might fancy his chances of getting some playing time.
Yeah, I mean, we sit, Andrew, we sit in front of that happening. Just to the right of the tunnel by the press box, that's where all our gang is, so we can see, you know, you can see that very clearly, and he looked as you would be, you know, a young kid, as you say, about to come on. He looked crushed, and we've seen that before, and it is football, and you know, the swings and roundabouts mean that because of Welbeck's injury he'll be that step closer to making his debut against, to making a start in the Carling Cup, albeit it's against them, or in the future, in the Europa Cup rounds and stuff. So that was really sad for him. It was quite nice to see, you know, the squad working, as you say, Ainsley Maitland-Niles coming back. We've been putting out not quite a second string. We've been using the extent of the squad, and you can see that Emery's kind of is making that work for him. So it felt quite sad yesterday having those two injuries. We haven't had a kind of evening like that for a while because, you know, it's worked. I guess what I'm saying is that the squad has kind of worked. Some players have come out, others have come back. People have taken their chances, as you say, to have that option for Maitland-Niles to come back. It seemed like at the right time, Kolasinac came back in time. Do you know what I mean? So that we haven't had... I mean, we all remember the great left-back crisis of, what was it, 2009 or something like that? Or, you know, Arshavin up front. Those kind of things haven't happened for a while. So it is desperately unlucky for the players going out. It was hard for Eddie Nketiah to miss out, but he'll definitely get his chance.
I think so. I think so. You know, when you look at what's left in this Europa League campaign, we've got a trip to Ukraine, which, from what I believe, is a flight and then a fairly substantial road journey to get to Vorskla, which is coming on a Thursday. And on the Sunday, we have a North London derby. So as much as Unai Emery has tried to make the squad competitive and kept the Europa League more in line with the Premier League sides than Arsene Wenger did last season, when he looks at these last two games, given that we've already qualified, you know, ahead of a North London derby against a Spurs team who, you know, are decent, as we know, I want to see Nketiah, not just because I want to see a young player in the team, but because I don't want to see Lacazette or Aubameyang making that kind of a journey before we have a game of that importance. There is obviously going to be some senior player involvement. There has to be. The squad is not that deep that we can completely change it around, but it is the kind of game where you're thinking, okay, this is where we need to give him a chance. We've got to focus on Premier League. You've got Tottenham coming up and then Manchester United 3 days later. You know, if you bring key players for those games to Ukraine to play in a game, which in the grand scheme of things doesn't really matter that much. I'm not sure topping the group makes a huge amount of difference in the Europa League. You know, I think this is where he's got to draw a line between the Premier League and the Europa League.
100%. And you know what? It feels... yesterday had that second string feel about it, but it was a very strong one as well. So I kind of feel confident going with that, more so than when we used to send, you know, the December game, you know, the December game six, where we'd send, you know, which we've all seen again for the last, you know, 5-7 years, where we'd send a team and just wait for them to get beat. You'd feel confident with them. And that's another, you'd feel confident with, you know, the side that we would send. And that was another reason why it was quite sad for, you know, having Danny Welbeck as your, you know, your second string forward is fantastic. And, you know, we saw Ramsey yesterday. I thought Mkhitaryan had a game that would hopefully help his confidence, because I think, I think he's struggled a little bit. We can still send, as you say, quite a strong side out there. It was interesting to see Sokratis come back yesterday, you know? And I've already mentioned Kolasinac, and God, I mentioned Jenkins, and I'm sure we'll come back to him later on. But there was a... we've got to send out... We can send a squad out there preparing us for Tottenham, but also should hopefully do enough to win the game. I hope some of them don't travel. I know he's, you know, even for the bench, I know he's done that a little bit, but there's a mental refreshment that goes with staying at home and watching TV, I think. And we've got, and we have to, and frankly, we have to beat them.
The group stages themselves in the Europa League, it's fair to say, are not great. I did enjoy Tim Stillman's tweet last night. He said, Sporting, Arsenal's closest rivals to top the group, didn't produce a shot on target over 180 minutes against two understrength, below par Arsenal teams. Group stages are a load of old shite, which I think applies much more to the Europa League than the Champions League, for example, because there tend to be maybe two reasonable teams in a group, and you can find yourself in a group with three or four actual good teams. So the quality of the opposition, therefore the quality of the games, is a bit more interesting. You know, on the basis of that, though, you would have to fancy our chances of getting a result going to Ukraine with an understrength, underpar team. You know, not that you take anything for granted. Every game is difficult, blah, blah, blah. But I, you know, you
come
ask,
on,
yeah,
come on.
Come on, exactly. And ask yourself, would you rather go and see Mesut Ozil score a hat trick against Vorskla and then, you know, do his back in getting onto the plane on the way back and therefore miss Tottenham and United? Or, you know, can you take a relatively poor result without it impacting your chances in the knockout stages? It's just a no-brainer.
Yeah, definitely. And I've been really disappointed. I mean, I was really disappointed with that Sporting side, home and away. You know, I was away, unfortunately, so I couldn't go to the away leg because, you know, that would have sounded, that kind of sounded fun, trip to Lisbon and so on, but the game didn't kind of live up to it. Maybe, as with a lot of these kind of European ghosts, you kind of live in the, you know, you live in the romance of your head that a trip to Lisbon is going to be great and, you know, and it's going to be more of an exciting game. But they were nasty yesterday as well.
Yeah, they were, weren't they?
Seeing them close up, they were properly snide. I mean, led, of course, by Nani, who played his part, you know, to perfection. But they were really, really sly. And a shout-out to Guendouzi, actually, yesterday. Because he was getting really frustrated. We've seen him lose, you know, we've seen him kind of with the rash challenge the other week, or at least the kind of inexperience the other week. He was getting really, really knocked yesterday, and they were trying to do that. And, no shots on target, and a really snide, disappointing side. I think maybe the novelty of going to new places, which we enjoyed last season, kind of dissipated a little bit when the groups came through this time. You know, The first question is where, and then the second one is who. So let's get to some good teams quickly, because hopefully this is the last year that we're gonna have to do this. One other thing, I mean, but just before Welbeck got injured, I was saying that. I was kind of hoping to see Aubameyang come on in his preferred position, in that Welbeck position, as a centre forward, if you like, because I know recently, because I wanted to see him get that run out there, not in the way that he did, unfortunately, but with Lacazette, you know, making the central berth kind of his own with his form recently, I kind of wanted to see Aubameyang get a run out and see whether. He could have more of an attacking threat from a central post, because I do wonder what the effect is going to be. I know he's done well out there, but I do wonder what the effect is going to be for, you know, he's been playing a central striker all his life. And so I kind of hoped that he'd get a couple yesterday and grow taller as a result of it, really. So I'm kind of interested to see how that's going to develop this season. I know we seem to be muddling through with it at the moment, but we have got two highly kind of technical players in that position, kind of rotating on terms of form at the moment. You know, it was different last season with, I think Aubameyang was playing more central last season. At least he started off that way.
Yeah.
I'm kind of interested to see how that's going to play out.
Yeah. 4-4-2. 4-4-2, 4-4-2.
Those days are done.
Oh, I know those days are done. But it is a conundrum for Emery, I think. And you're right. You know, it was... You know, the overall performance from Arsenal wasn't great. We didn't create a great deal of chances. I think Aubameyang had one very early in the second half. And right towards the end, he might have got a goal when he went through behind and he got chopped down by Mathieu, who got the red card. But it really does still feel like this is an area that Emery has to make a decision on sooner rather than later. Although I wonder if he kind of considers it the least of his problems in a way, because when you've got Lacazette, Aubameyang, Ozil, Mkhitaryan, Ramsey, you had Welbeck, you've got Alex Iwobi making strides as well. You're probably a little less focused on how you deploy those players, and you worry a little bit more about the defensive side of your team, particularly in Premier League terms. You know, as encouraging and positive and everything else as the Liverpool game was at the weekend, and I still feel really good about what we did in that game, you can't ignore the fact that there were chances for Liverpool, as there have been in almost every game that we've played so far this season. And on the one hand, you know, I'm absolutely behind the whole concept of enjoy the results, enjoy the run we're on. It's 14 games unbeaten now or whatever it is. Brilliant. I think that's absolutely fantastic, and I'm on board and I'm positive about it. At the same time, there's a nagging doubt, you know, in the pit of my stomach that one day we're going to get punished for the chances that we give the opposition, and we won't necessarily have the goals in us to rescue the situation. So, you know, we saw last night that Sporting weren't that good. They weren't really in any way ambitious. They were well organized and they sat deep and they really made it difficult for us to break them down, but we couldn't find a way through. So it's not as if we're we're scoring in every single game, although we have scored in every single game up to now. It's just the point I'm making is that at some point we might hit a blank up front and it might coincide with the opposition taking their chances at the other end.
That's true, but and I share your, you know, I share that feeling in the pit of the stomach, but after this, that's what was so encouraging about the Liverpool game. Look, we thought we were going to get, if not a Merson style spanking, you know, we knew it was going to be a test, and you know how nervous we were, but the team played so well and defended so well by being on the front foot, you know, a lot of the time and absorbing a lot of the pressure. Yes, we did, you know, yes, we did concede chances, but I just felt really encouraged defensively that perhaps we are slightly further on than we thought. And maybe that's something to do with, if not so much the back four, but the back six, you know, Torreira pulling a really strong performance out of Xhaka, one of my favourite things was seeing Xhaka's tackle back on Salah. It seems like that little period at the left, maybe he wouldn't have done that if he hadn't been playing left back for the last couple of weeks before, but it just seems like defensively we are moving towards what Unai Emery wants, you know, and so I'm slightly less terrified with the games coming up than if that could be seen as a positive, being slightly less terrified.
Wow. That's good. It's incremental progress. That's another way of putting it. If we could do it in marketing speak,
you know. And look, I mean, we're going to come on. You know, we're watching him improve players. I mean, Rob Holding was great against Liverpool. You and I's favourite, Mustafi. I always think of you when he does something. Like, as you know, I message you, kind of giggling as I do it, because I know that you're there punching yourself in the face. But he had a good game, and defensively, that seems to be, there is an improvement there, and it's brilliant watching these players be improved, you know, week on week at the moment, which sounds really, really obvious, but hasn't been really obvious up till now.
Yeah, look, I mean, even Carl Jenkinson is starting games again.
Winner himself. I keep thinking he's going to come out at half time and take some shots against Garnasaurus just to kind of complete... Just to complete the, the image.
He's living the dream. He is living the dream.
He really is. And
you know what? You know that moment where he took that shot yesterday. The ball dropped to him, probably a good 35 yards out, and he thought, fuck it. When am I ever going to get a chance to have a go at this again? I know what he was thinking. He catches the ball sweetly. It loops up in the air. It's one of those where you think it's going miles over. The keeper's looking at it. All of a sudden, it starts to dip, and it just dips under the crossbar. Postage stamp. That's where it goes. On the volley, he turns away and soaks up the admiration and the adoration from the Arsenal fans. Because you know what? In that situation, I would have tried exactly the same thing. It probably would have come off exactly the same way. But yeah. I don't blame him one bit for having a go.
Do you know what? You've just described that. Because it's the same position. You've just described David Bentley's goal against us in that 4-4. In almost the same position. Catch it the same way. It's going to dip in like that. Yeah, he'd scored it before he'd hit it, hadn't he? But he goes on. He's living the dream. He's us on the pitch. He plays for the club that he supports. I mean, and he did a shift at left back as well. So fair play to him. And again, going back to this thing about the squad, he's been reintegrated into the squad, and he'll see some games this season. Yeah. And that's, I mean, you know, that's a real positive thing. I do wonder if Callum Chambers is looking at all of this, thinking, do you know what, I could have been part of this. a little bit. I don't think it was his choice.
No, exactly.
I might add, but yeah, I mean, he still might look a little bit wistfully and thinking that this would be a good squad to be training with and to be improving with. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. One of the other players who has improved, I did mention him a bit earlier on, was Alex Iwobi. Like others, he didn't quite hit the heights yesterday against Sporting, but I thought he was very good when he came on against Liverpool. That moment where he did matrix football on the left wing against, was it Alexander-Arnold? The feet were just like, it reminds me of when I play video games, and lots of people are good at video games when it comes to fighting and swords and all that kind of shit. And they can press all the buttons and do the special moves, like in Street Fighter 2 and that kind of shit. Whereas I just would go in and just like, just smash the buttons. And his feet were moving like that. It was unbelievable the way he got past that guy. But you must be very pleased with the progress he's making this season. I still think there's a need for him to just provide a little more end product in terms of what he's doing, but I think overall there is definitely an improvement in his game.
Yeah, but like everything about this club this season, it is incremental, really. He has, you know, you mentioned he made such a positive impact when he came on against Liverpool. So that was a great substitution at a great time, going at a young fullback later on in the game with his energy, and that's what, you know, and the pass that kind of led to the goal. And he said himself he's playing with a bit more energy and confidence, you know, which has been just the real key. He's taking on players and not letting his head go down afterwards. He's chasing back if he does make a kind of mistake with it. I'm so happy for him that I thought he'd start against Liverpool ahead of Mkhitaryan. I think, perhaps Mkhitaryan's kind of more defensive awareness kind of got him the berth. But, you know, he did exactly what he had to do when he came on, and he's done that this season. And he's another player who's been, I know you've been saying you're hammering the point home when you're on the Arsecast beforehand, but, you know, this manager's improving players. He's, whether they've got better instructions or they've got some, or they're just taking a new lease of life. I'm not going to denigrate the old regimes, start rewriting history. But there's quite obviously an uplift and impetus for players like Iwobi, really. And also, it's great to see. Yeah, he's a youth product. You know what I mean? We want to see these guys getting more, and it's really important. Him, Maitland-Niles, these are youth products who are blossoming and feeling that they've got a place in that team. And it's really, really exciting to see.
Mm. I think that gets a little bit left out when it comes to discussion of Iwobi, perhaps because he'd represented England at youth level for many years, and then they just left him alone and didn't call him up, and he obviously went for Nigeria.
I'm pretty pleased about that.
Yeah, no, I'm sure you are, and I'm sure lots of our Nigerian listeners are as well. But I do wonder if the story around him would be different if he had been an England player, or had been an England international rather than a Nigerian international, and his status as a homegrown player would probably get mentioned a bit more. But anyway, that's a discussion for another day. Just very finally, and that leads us quite nicely into it, tell us a little bit about what it is that you're doing at the moment, because people will know, or maybe they don't, but you produce lots of stuff for people to listen to, radio shows and podcasts and that kind of stuff, but you're working on a very interesting project at the moment.
Yeah, I'm currently making a documentary called The Black Footballer's Dilemma. It's 40 years since Viv Anderson made his debut for England this month, and I'm making a program for Radio 4 looking at the experience. It's called the experience of a lot of a lot of black footballers in the top flight over that 40-year period. It's a kind of personal stories, but also looking at the issue about whether they confronted or conformed, whether they made their how they negotiated their way through a pretty racist time and the choices that they made. And I've been, it's presented by Clark Carlisle, who's a, I couldn't speak any more highly of, a really, really lovely bloke. And it features Paul Mortimer. I went up to Liverpool to see John Barnes. I went to go to even more glamorous St Albans to meet our own Paul Davis. And Tuesday Club fans will want to know that I didn't take him any minstrels on this occasion. Went to see Brendan Batson yesterday. So just kind of, these individual stories. And that's going out. It's on Archive on 4, and that's going to be next Saturday night. And, of course, on the iPlayer. It's been illuminating, depressing.
That's a question I just want to ask very quickly. I mean, how illuminating has it been, given that I think people were well aware of how difficult it was for black footballers at that time? You don't have to go back too far to find bananas being thrown on the pitch and all that. But was it worse, having spoken to these guys, was it worse than you thought it was or understood it to be?
It's as bad as I understood it to be. It's incredible to think of the strength, whichever way you decided to deal with it, whether it was strength in confronting, your own player, your own teammates, as well as supporters, or kind of navigating your way through with a more kind of in a slightly more peaceful way. But there, in either case, first of all, there's no right answers, and secondly, any way that you choose to confront that kind of prejudice and navigate a career, took a massive amount of strength. And bear in mind, I've only been talking to players who achieved a quite high level. There are players in the lower leagues. There's players there's people, of course, who've had to put up with this for longer than the 40 years, of course, that we're talking about, and made it easier for the players today. We're kind of standing on the shoulders of those giants, of those pioneers who went before. We talk about obviously Cyril Regis, who passed this year. I've mentioned Brendan Batson and Viv Anderson and Paul Mortimer, and I spoke to Pat Nevin, who plays a really key part in this story, which hopefully once I finish it, it should be an interesting experience for anyone listening.
All right, well, look, we'll give it a good plug on the site when it's up and available. That's around next week. I reckon it's something we could probably do a whole podcast on as well, but we better leave it there for now, because you've got important things and people to attend to this morning. So look, thanks for your time, Tayo. Great to talk to you.
Always a pleasure, Andrew. Cheers, pal.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/arsblog. As ever, thanks a million to Tayo. You can follow him on Twitter at DJ Tayo, at DJ Tayo. And who knows, there might be a Tuesday Club podcast or two along the way at some point during this season. Well, Beck, what can you say? It really is a big shame. The contract thing, I was thinking about that a little bit, and we had a situation, didn't we, with Santi Cazorla, where he was badly injured, been out of the game for a while, and Arsenal extended his contract and gave him an extra year. And during that period of time, he continued his rehab. Unfortunately, he couldn't get back in time to make one final appearance in the Arsenal shirt, which I think still is a real shame. And the fact that we never got a chance to say goodbye properly to Santi Cazorla is a real shame as well. But the difference is, he was a player of 32 years of age who had an option for an extra year on his contract that the club make a decision about whether or not they take up. And I think, leaving aside the business element, leaving aside the financial element, what I always liked about Arsenal and Arsene Wenger was the fact that they considered the human element as well. The players are people, and when we decided to extend Santi Cazorla's deal by 1 year, it was obviously with the hope that he might come back and play for us, but it was also the right thing to do. It allowed him to continue his recovery from what was a truly horrible injury, when you consider that he had to have, you know, skin from his arm grafted onto his Achilles. He had to have, it was just terrible, in the infections and everything else. So if Arsenal, at that point in a player's life and his career, with his career on the line, basically, even though he was, you know, in the latter stages of it anyway, when he was really low as a person, he was away in Spain. His family, I think, were back in the UK, and he was going over and doing his rehab in Spain. It was a dreadful injury. If at that point we had said, well, that's it, we wash our hands of you, I would have been so disappointed in Arsenal as a football club. I think we did the right thing by Santi Cazorla. We gave him that comfort of an extra year. He even spoke about it himself, saying how important it was, knowing that he had this reassurance there, and it helped him come back. And he's back playing now for Villarreal, and that's fantastic. And I don't think anybody would begrudge Santi Cazorla a couple of extra years playing football, considering what he missed. The difference, I think, with Welbeck is that Arsenal had all appear, anyway, to have made a decision about Welbeck's contract, that they're not going to extend it. And I don't think an injury, regardless of how serious it is or how sorry we feel for Danny Welbeck or how much sympathy there is for him, that should then spark a new contract offer. If you weren't going to give him a new contract when he was fit, you're not going to give him a new contract when he's injured, just because he's injured. And it might sound a bit harsh, but he's still only 27, Danny Welbeck. He might miss the rest of this season. I hope he comes back before that, but he may well miss the rest of this season. But he can get treatment, he can get recovery, he can get physiotherapy, he can get rehab, he can do his fitness, he can work his way back to full proper fitness at Arsenal, with all the facilities available, with all the staff available, with all the resources available to him. And in the summer, at 27 years of age, maybe he'll be 28, he's available on a free transfer to whoever wants him, and you can be quite sure that somebody will want him. So it really is a bad situation for him this season. I think it's a blow to us right now. I'm not sure what might happen with Reece Nelson. I'm trying to find out whether or not we can recall him from his loan spell with Hoffenheim, or if the season-long loan is set in stone. He might be an option. Eddie Nketiah is somebody who might get some more playing time, as we discussed. But in the long term, I don't think there's any grounds to give Danny Welbeck a new contract if we had already made our minds up that we weren't going to do that while he was fit and able and healthy to play. So, look, it's terrible, and it's always unfortunate to see somebody pick up a bad injury. we still haven't got the full diagnosis. So maybe, fingers crossed, it's not as bad as we fear. But it's hard not to worry, isn't it, when you see a guy go off the pitch with oxygen and his foot in one of those air socks or air boots or whatever they're called. So we'll keep fingers crossed for him and hope that we'll see him again in an Arsenal shirt. And he can make a bit of an impact before what feels like an inevitable departure next summer. Right. It's difficult to know what else to say on this particular episode. I know we have a game against Wolves on Sunday. Players will come back into the squad. Lacazette, Leno, Bellerin, hopefully. Monreal could be back. Kolasinac, Xhaka, Torreira, Ozil. These guys will come back into the team for what is a very important game on Sunday against a side that have been good this season, even though they may well have benefited from some, not illegal, obviously, but rather unscrupulous dealings with one of the big super agents. Jorge Mendes, of course, is highly involved with all the transfers, or many of the transfers that are going in and out of that club. So Mendes is pal of Mourinho. Therefore, Wolves are a bit Mourinho to me. Not quite the fairy story some people would make out. So I'm looking for us to give them a good hiding on Sunday. Hopefully we can do that with the players that we've got back who are fresh, who can add a bit more to our attacking game. We've got an interlull straight after that as well. So we need to go into this particular international break with the momentum, with our unbeaten run intact, keeping pace with those other teams in the top four. Hopefully one or two might drop some points. It can all get a bit tight and condensed and squashed in that race for the Champions League places. So we'll keep fingers crossed for that. James and I will be here at some point with an Arsecast Extra. Not sure if it's going to be Sunday or Monday. I'll keep you up to date on social media and on the website over the weekend, so keep an eye there. In the meantime, take it easy. Catch you on the next one. Until then, cheers. Bye-bye.
Welcome back to Sky Sports News. The big story this afternoon, Tottenham have been found guilty by the Advertising Standards Authority for misleading fans into thinking their stadium was the only place you could watch Champions League football in London this season. Of course, they don't have a stadium and have fallen foul of advertising guidelines. As well as that, there's also legal action coming from fast food giant KFC, who say that their logo, which is a chicken on a basketball, is in direct contravention to a new promotion they're carrying out alongside the NBA in the US. We reached out to Tottenham chairman Daniel Levy for a reaction. A spokesperson said he was too busy counting his £6 million a year he earns for presiding over the worst stadium construction anybody can remember. Next, though, on Sky Sports, Sam Allardyce tells us why eating 7 cans of tinned pumpkin a day is going to get him back into Premier League management.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.